It's the weekend, and you have financial questions that need answering. That can only mean one thing. It's time for Jill on Money, the show that takes the mystery out of your finances. Here's your host, Jill Schlesinger.
Welcome to Jill on Money. Welcome to August. Yes, the dog days, et cetera, et cetera. This is the show that takes the mystery out of your financial life. I'm Jill Schlesinger. I'm joined by Mark, Marky Mark. What was your nickname, Mark, in the, you know, maybe in the ice hockey rink? What was that? He's thinking. He's pondering. Does he not have a nickname, or can I not say it on the air? He didn't. Marky Mark, Marcus, LL Cool M. Where's the funky bunch? Anyway, Mark produces the show and he runs my life, and I'm thankful for it and grateful to have the best producer in the world right here with me. And you are so delightful for joining us. And, you know, if you've got a financial question, lots of ways to get in touch with us. 855-411-JILL. You can also send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. And remember, if you're looking for a financial advisor, a planner, hop on to the CFP website, letsmakeaplan.org. Letsmakeaplan.org. That will help you search for an advisor who operates with your best interests going numero uno. That's called the fiduciary duty. Remember, I am a certified financial planner. I'm the senior CFP board ambassador, and that's why I love this organization. I'm telling you. You want to see some of the stuff I've done for the CFP board? Go check out our YouTube channel. Search Jill Schlesinger. Friend of the show, Connie, says she doesn't like those spots, but I like them. I think they're nice and easy. 60 seconds on, or 40, 30 to 60 seconds on any topic. All right, let's start the show, as we do always, a caller from you. We've got John from Houston on the line.
Hi, Jill. So I'm looking at how to protect myself from taxes in retirement. So I'm evaluating either a Roth 401k or a indexed life insurance that I can take loans from. And okay. So I'm not sure which way to go.
Okay. Tell me a little bit about you and a little just about your family and what's going on.
Sure. So our income's about $350K. My wife's a teacher, and we've recently paid off our house, so we're totally debt-free. We have one child, and we have some money, about $60K in 529s. And then in terms of other investments, we have 401Ks and 413Bs of around $265. We have a Roth IRA with about $75K. Another IRA with about $40K in it, $52 in robo-advisors, and then like about $180 in equity investments.
Great. That sounds fantastic. So it sounds like you're actually doing a really good job of putting money away. Obviously, $350,000 a year is a lot of money, so I don't want to say that that's nothing, but that is a good chunk of money, but you're also doing a good job of saving. So right now, what would you guess is your ability to save? I presume that you're maxing out your retirement account. Your wife is also maxing out to the extent she can. How much do you figure you're putting away on an annual basis in your various investment vehicles?
So she's also part of a, you know, a state-sponsored annuity as a teacher. So we do about a third in taxes. We try to do about a third in investments, and then we live off the last third.
Great. That's fantastic. So do you think you're putting away like $100,000 a year? Well, let's say after tax, maybe $75,000 a year?
A little more than that, around 80, 85 to 90 is is the combo.
Now, tell me one thing. How old are you? We didn't get to that.
I'm 44.
Yep.
And my wife is, she's 53.
Oh, that's very good, because on an actuarial basis, you're going to be perfect. You'll die the exact same day. It'll be great.
That's right.
Right. I'm nicely planned. Well done. So what's the game plan in terms of your retirement? What are you thinking about?
Well, we think we'd like to retire early, but, you know, we want to make sure the money works out. I know she'll retire before I do, and we have this kind of unique combination with her age, where we can start to pull from her 403B and her IRA even before I retire. So there's a little bit to play with there of when we'll be forced to take distributions for her as compared to me and when I retire and when we can take money out of other investments that we have.
And you asked about a Roth 401k. So what is the current plan that you have through work? Do you have are you using a traditional 401k right now?
Yep. So I have a really nice 401k plan, lots of options. So we max that out, and then I have an opportunity to start contributing to a Roth 401k.
So I love this idea for you. And I'm going to tell you why. Because obviously, as you know, the rules preclude you from contributing to a new Roth IRA because you make too much money.
Right.
So the cool thing about the Roth 401k is there's no income test. That's huge for someone like you. And I love the idea that, you know, you get to put this money away. And, you know, look, you're still pretty young. So putting this money away today and knowing what your tax liability is going to be and already having a bunch of money that's tax deferred is actually really a strong case for using the Roth 401k versus an indexed annuity or even life insurance. Because my fear on getting involved with any of these indexed insurance products is that they're expensive. Whereas your Roth 401k, I don't know what the investment choices inside of that plan are, but I bet you it's going to be far cheaper than the net cost to you in any life insurance product like an annuity or some sort of indexed-based life insurance policy.
Yeah, that makes sense in terms of lower fees for the actual funds themselves versus paying for, like, the life insurance.
Yeah. I mean, look, the chances are, as I'm looking at your, I'm trying to, like, get a ballpark for where you are right now, right? So if I think you gave me was something like, I don't know, $600,000-$700,000. Is that you've saved? Is that right?
Yep.
Okay. So, I mean, if you have $700,000 right now, and you then are able to sock away more money. And if you get maxed out on the Roth 401k, just keep putting into your non-retirement accounts. Just make those like, you know, like the slush fund accounts. That's fine. I far prefer that to any sort of life insurance product that's going to be so much more expensive. I mean, even if you look at the cost of, say, index funds or a robo-advisor next to an insurance product, it's crazy. It's like you, with the insurance world, you start digging a hole and you start the year off at like minus 2%. And then you got to go from there. Whereas the alternative is, hey, it's less than a quarter of a percent a year. I far prefer that. And I think you'll have plenty of control, not as many nasty rules about how to get the money in out. I like your game plan right now. And I like the idea of using the Roth 401k to get that money into a retirement vehicle that essentially is going to grow tax free until you decide when you want to pull it out.
Okay, that makes sense.
All right. So go forth. Get that 401k rocking with the Roth 401k. If you have other questions, you just let us know. All right. When we return, more of your questions. It's Jill on Money, 855-411-JILL. Send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. We'll be right back.
Do I invest here? Should I put my money there? Jill Schlesinger can help you. Back to Jill on Money.
You're back with Jill on Money. We'd love to hear from you. 855-411-JILL. Send us an email. askjill@jillonmoney.com. By the way, now that the Federal Reserve has essentially said they're not going to do anything, and everyone seems to think that everything's going to stay status quo for quite some time, maybe even until December, that's bad news for savers. And if you are a saver and you are looking to generate more money from your either your emergency reserve fund or your savings account, you're going to have to look around. But remember, one site that we often will recommend is depositaccounts.com. Check that out. You might be able to find some better earning cash. Also, credit unions tend to pay more on their accounts. Check that out. All right, let's go take a call right now. It's Barry from Pennsylvania. You're up next on Jill on Money.
Hey, Jill. Thanks for taking my call.
No, happy to do it. What's up?
All right, here's our situation.
All right, I'm ready.
My wife and I, I'm 56, my wife's 55. Mm-hmm. We're both self-employed. Mm-hmm. And we, from now till about 60, we would like to cut back to, like, part-time.
Oh, look at you.
And then at 60, we either retire or continue working if we want to.
Tell me that you have saved a bazillion dollars so we can make your plan work.
Okay, I'll go through what I have here.
Okay.
Tax-sheltered IRAs, et cetera. Mm-hmm. We have about $1.3 million.
Okay.
Non-tax-sheltered, we have about $150,000 in stocks.
Okay.
$120,000 in cash. And we have two investment properties.
Oh.
Which give us about $20,000 a year clear.
And those, you would keep those? In other words, those you would plan to keep in retirement or sell those?
As long as they don't become too much of a headache.
A couple things. The investment properties, how much are they worth right now?
Combined, about $450,000.
Is there a mortgage outstanding on them?
We have one mortgage. Mm-hmm. For our primary home and everything. So
okay.
It's all bundled into one.
Okay.
We have a mortgage of $200,000 right now we have a home equity loan of $50,000 because we're doing some remodeling.
So $250,000 outstanding debt against the primary residence, which is worth how much right now, approximately?
Four and a quarter.
Would you want to stay in that home? Is that like the place where you really want to live out the rest of the, let's say the early part of retirement at
early
least?
Early part, probably. Latter part, probably heading south.
Okay. All right. Any other debt besides the mortgage?
No.
Okay. How much do you think you need to live in the part-time period? Like, if you worked part-time, would that cover your... Would you work just enough to cover your costs, but you wouldn't save much more?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
Right? So you work enough just to cover all of your expenses. Then, tell me at age 60... what the expense level would be. So let's say at 60, how much money do we need to create in income for you guys?
Well, right now our combined income is around 135.
Okay.
And we're still putting in like 30 into a simple IRA a year. So that's kind of where I'm not really sure.
Oh, come on. You can't make me do all the hard work. Well, let's say this. If you make 135 together, right, you know that off the top 30 grand is coming, right, because you're –
Right.
So that's 105, and then you got to pay tax on that. But you know, so let's presume that you would need how about $5,000 a month or $60,000 net to you guys.
Okay. Yeah.
That's probably what you're. I'm guessing. Okay. So let's just.
That sounds good.
But let's say the only reason why I round it up is. Yeah, I don't know, because you never know, because I want you to have a nice retirement. So $5,000 a month is what we need to create. All right, so let's go backwards. First of all, obviously, I don't actually want you to start drawing Social Security if you don't have to.
Right.
So the one thing, the fly in the ointment is, two things, is that, you know, when you go part-time, and you say you want to go till 60 or 62, what's your guess?
60 is the number.
Okay. So at that point, you need health care coverage, but, you know, you got to pay for that. But you're paying for it anyway. Since you're self-employed, you're used to paying that bill, right?
Yep.
Not a big deal. Okay. So.
Oh, it is, but.
I mean, meaning not a big deal in terms of, not a big change, I should say.
Right,
always
right.
A big deal, but not
right,
a big deal.
Right,
okay.
Right.
So now, I guess the question is this. Do you have enough money to float you so that you don't have to claim Social Security at age 62 and take that big haircut? And, I mean, the answer is, so let me just make sure I have the assets. You said you have tax-preferenced assets, IRA, retirement account assets, $1.3 million, non-retirement assets, $150,000, cash of $130,000, and then you've got the houses and stuff.
Right.
Okay. And so what we know is that you need $60,000, $20,000 you'll get from the rental properties. So now we need $40,000 a year. So what you could presumably do is say, well, my non-retirement assets of $150,000, I could use that for a few years, hopefully stretch that out, you know, make that 4 years worth of coverage to get me to my Social Security retirement age. It's not quite enough, but maybe I could convince you to work till 61. So basically, plan on spending down the non-retirement assets so that you don't have to claim Social Security early.
Right.
All right?
Okay.
So let's assume that. So let me just give you one thing. So in the next 5 years before you, or 4 or 5 years before you guys actually do plan to call it quits, one thing I would suggest is we want to beef up those non-retirement assets a little bit. Almost, I would almost prefer you, I know this sounds crazy because you're probably doing a lot of tax deferred stuff and it's important, but I mean, if you can, a little extra money in that account is going to help you because you're going to need to drain some of your money, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Did you say you have any Roth accounts or was just all...
We have like 40,000 in Roth.
Okay, that's fine. All right, so now here's my back of the envelope calculation. You retire when you're 60. You use those non-retirement accounts first. Now, I'm not saying the cash, because you have an emergency reserve and you said about 130 to 125, 130, right?
Right.
Don't touch that. That I still want you to preserve. But the non-retirement assets, that's what I want you to spend to come up with the money that you need to survive so that you don't have to claim Social Security benefits early. Okay? So you use that first. You can dip into your retirement assets. You know, when you're 64 or 65, you can pull some money out to float your needs, to supplement that rental income, right? So we know you've got 20 grand of net rental income. We need to net you another $40,000 a year. Use your non-retirement assets to get that 40 grand, again, later into your 60s, in your mid-60s, before you claim Social Security. You may need to dip into your IRA assets, your protected assets as well, and pay some tax on them. Okay, now we claim Social Security, and boy, the world does change in a great way for you. Because presumably at that point, you're going to get $2,400 a month, she's going to get $2,200. $4,600 a month, extra money coming in. It's 55 grand a year, right? That money, once it's taxed, is going to give you, I think, on a net, and I mean, again, who knows exactly what tax rates are going to be, but I'm giving an estimate. I'm guessing that that's going to get you pretty close because you'll have your rental income is 20 grand. I think you'll net pretty close to that extra 40 grand that you need to survive from Social Security. So I think two Social Security checks plus your rental income is going to get you pretty close. Sure, if you need to dip into the retirement accounts to make do, fine. Because by the time you retire and you're in 66 and 8 months, those retirement assets are going to not be 1.3. They're going to be at least 1.5 million. They're probably going to be more. And you can dip into that very easily to float your need. So amazingly, I think you can do this. I really think you can do this. It's important that you realize that this works as long as nothing really big and bad happens. You have kids. What's the story in your like real life? What else?
We don't have kids, and, you know, if we run out of money the day we die, perfect.
We've won. We've beat them all. You know, I think that you're going to make this. What about health-wise? You guys in good health?
Yes, we're both in good health. We also have a long-term care policy, too, which...
Oh, that's great. All right, so I actually think that you can do this. Okay, if you want to find out whether you can do it, just give us a holler, 855-411-JILL, or send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. More of your questions when we return. We'll be right back.
Jill. That's the number to call to have your financial questions answered. Back to Jill on Money with Jill Schlesinger.
You're back with Jill on Money. If you've got a financial question, 855-411-JILL. Send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. Hey, Mark, don't you do that whole shenanigans with all your coffee making and stuff? What do? You do like the pour over thing? You grind your own? Do you have a specific coffee grinder? I just read this big article about the best coffee grinder, and they like the Baratza Virtuoso. And also, seven of the most popular and best reviewed sub $100 coffee machines. And they said the OXO On 9-cup coffee maker. I might have to get a new coffee maker. You're a pour over guy. All right. Well, you know. They also say if you're just looking for the drug, meaning that you just want your caffeine fix, that it totally doesn't matter what you buy because you just need your fix. And they did call out my Nespresso machine as the good one. Like, they hate Keurig, but anyway, are you coffee fiends like we are? We wake up early. What can I say? This is the program that is not about coffee, but takes the mystery out of your financial life. Lots of ways to get in touch with us. You can just send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. You can call us, 855-411-JILL. And you should go to jillonmoney.com or to our YouTube channel. Just search Jill Schlesinger. You can find past shows and also see videos and clips of segments that I do for television. But our favorite thing is to talk to you, and that's why we are going out, and we've got Ashley on the line. Hi, Ashley.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about student loans.
Okay. She says with the, okay, how old are you?
I'm 28.
28. All right. So tell me about what you got going on.
Okay, so my significant other and I are, we met in graduate school, and we have a very large amount of student loans. So combined, it's probably something like $300,000.
Whoa. Hold on. You got to tell me more about, like, what did you do? Did you go to law school or medical school? What are you doing?
We both have PhDs.
Uh-huh.
Wait
a minute. PhDs do you have jobs now?
We have jobs, yeah. We're psychologists. We're in mental health, but
okay.
No, I don't know.
Okay, wait a second.
It's scary.
It is scary. Okay. So how much do each of you make?
Combined we make around $200,000.
Okay.
A year.
Okay. That's great.
He makes around $110,000, I make around $90,000, and then after bonuses and stuff like that, I mean, it can maybe go up to like 215-ish.
Are you, either of you, working for a place where you might actually get some forbearance on your student loan debt?
So, I mean, my main question is, it's about split down the middle, like about 150 each. Mm. And he's actually already enrolled in like the public loan forgiveness. So his will automatically be forgiven, I think, probably after like 8.5 more years. He's on income-based repayment as well.
Okay, that's great.
So with his, it's no problem. And we can make our payments just fine. We're both on the IDR.
Uh-huh.
But my main question is with mine, I work for the private sector, and I don't know if I should even try to pay these off or if I just stick with IDR and just do the minimum payment for like 23 more years.
Oh my God, it's sort of scary when you say it that way. The income-based repayment, what happens if you start making a lot more money? Then will your payments rise? Do you have to submit tax returns every year?
Yeah, you submit. You can either submit like your tax return or your last couple of pay stubs.
Okay. Do you think that your salary will rise over time, or do you think it's probably fairly static?
I think mine will, but I don't know if it will rise that much.
Mm-hmm. If you're making, let's say, around $100,000 or $120,000, what is the interest rate that you're paying? Do we know how much it's actually costing you when it's an income-based plan?
I think it's like 10%
okay.
of your take-home. So I think that I'm guessing I'm not even paying. I don't know. I mean, my payments are on like $600 a month, and it's fine. It's easy to pay.
Okay. So all right. Here's the thing. Since you're enrolled in this plan already, I say that maybe you just keep rolling with it. I'm not sure you have to accelerate it. Because what would be the reason to, let's think about this. Why would we accelerate it? Okay, we get like an emotional, awesome payoff. So yes, if you inherited $150,000 tomorrow and you're like, woohoo, I'm done with my loans, that's great. But the fact that this, I mean, first of all, you're young, it's income based. So, and you said you can afford it. And this would allow you to have some freed up cash flow to put money in retirement. Does your private sector employer offer you a retirement plan?
Yeah, I have about like $40,000 in my 401k right now.
Okay.
And then my significant other has a 401k and a pension.
I know this is going to sound crazy, but I actually think the status quo may work for you. because okay. I feel like there's no good reason to take your money and shift it over and take it away from these other savings vehicles that are going to be very important to you. Do you guys plan to have kids potentially down the line?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, like, the thing is, if you use every available dollar right now to pay off that debt, I'm not so sure that does you such a good deal in the future, because then how are you going to raise kids? How are you going to pay for these things? How are you going to save more for retirement and for education? I think you stick with the status quo. And for everyone listening out there, I just want to ask you, Ashley, did you find dealing with the income-based repayment plan difficult, or was it pretty easy to navigate?
It was so easy.
Okay, so like everyone listening, she's saying it's so easy. There's a lot of people who have old student loans that could qualify. So I want to encourage people to hear this, because you're saying, look, I got a mountain of debt. It stinks. It's going to be with me for a while. But you've got a game plan at least. And I guess I would think of it as like, it's kind of like a mortgage. Like, it'll be done when it gets done. And yeah. That seems okay with me, especially because, as you say, it's a reasonable amount. And, you know, if it were a private school loan and you weren't in that income-based repayment plan and you were paying 8% interest on it, then I think I would give you different advice. Okay, if you too have some student loan repayment issues, whether it's thousands of dollars, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, give us a holler. We'd love to hear from you. 855-411-JILL. Send an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. We'll be right back with more of your questions.
It's the weekend, and that can only mean one thing. You're listening to Jill on Money. Here she is, Jill Schlesinger.
You're back with Jill on Money. This is the program that takes the mystery out of your financial life. If you've got a question, could be about anything, give us a holler, 855-411-JILL, or send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. By the way, Mark, I was noticing on our Twitter followers, we're stuck. We can't get through. It's not? We're growing? I thought it was like 13.8 or something. It really? My friend Jeff Bacalar is like at 23,000. So, you know, I got to catch up with him. He's a CNET guy. Come on, guys, follow us on Twitter. I don't even know why, but just do. Anyway, Mark and I, when I say Mark, I mean Mark, has been tweeting some really cool stuff, like interesting articles and stuff from other people that you may not find. So we are going to be the curators of good personal financial stuff, including a recent article in the Wall Street Journal about financial advice and how cheap it's getting. Check that out by friend of ours, Jason Zweig, over at the Wall Street Journal. By the way, check out the podcast, Better Off. Get it on Apple, Stitcher, Google Play, SoundCloud, anywhere else you find your favorite podcasts. Okay, so a few weeks ago, someone wrote in about a refi. And what was interesting about the question was that there was a component of this that I may have missed, in that there was a second loan that was outstanding on the house that, because of specific local laws, had no interest and no payments for 20 years. So the person, Mrs. W., writes that she said, just FYI, I would be subordinating the second mortgage and I can renew this, blah, blah, blah. She's also been considering selling her home, and that was an idea. Okay. But here's the real issue. She writes, my number one concern is using a mortgage broker and senior mortgage loan officer. I know all about selling the loan and the officer and no pressure. It's making things easy and attractive. I know I'll play more with closing costs, but the ease of the transaction is tempting. How much trouble could I be opening myself up to with these people? Well, I don't know. I don't really think there's trouble. She's checked out their licenses. Nothing bad. And the question is, do federal laws give me enough protection? I have no friends or referrals to compare, only what I can glean online. You know, if you want, what you could do is kind of go to your local bank and just see how the process compares. It may be that it's not as easy, or wherever you hold your accounts, or go back to the original lender and see if you can get a quote. But, you know, my feeling about most of these loans is that, presuming that you ask a lot of questions, you're probably going to be okay. But I don't want you to get like too nutty, because, you know, as long as this is a licensed person, maybe check with a Better Business Bureau, I think it's going to be okay. So just be clear about that. And you can always get another quote, compare the offers. Okay. Here is from Sharon, who says, my husband died in February. I notified his creditors that he had died. I've been writing and calling one particular bank that a charge that is outstanding is not mine, and that my husband's estate is insolvent. So what did they do? They put it on my credit report, and now my score has dropped significantly. How do I get them to remove the ding? I sent them a fax with the last four digits of my social, as I was told they're just being mean. I know that this charge has been in his name only for years. Thank you, Sharon. Well, there's a couple of things that I would do. Number one is I would register a complaint with the CFPB, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. And I would go into annualcreditreport.com and pull the credit report and notify the report on which this is this is falling, the organization that's making the report, and one at which agency. And I would make sure, before you do all of that, that, you know, you said it's in his name only, be sure that that credit card for some reason wasn't joint, that there wasn't some weird way back when moment where things were pulled together. And then I would also ask, maybe I would ask an attorney associated with the estate, if you're settling that estate and you have an attorney to do so, to maybe get involved if you run into a brick wall. But keep fighting the fight, because these things can stick around for a while. We don't want your credit to be damaged. And presuming that you have kept, and this is one of those reasons, by the way, with why one of our favorite guests, John Alzheimer, has always said, don't get joint credit cards. Because these situations do arise. So try to avoid that fiasco. The only reason why we actually say that people should, you know, apply jointly for a mortgage is that you usually need both people to qualify. And, you know, so that's one of the things that we've always kept in mind, which is, hey, you know, like, if I need you, of course I'm going to do it. But ideally, you'd want everyone's credit record to be separate and distinct from one another, even married couples. Just cleaner. It can be cleaner down the line. So keep that in mind. I'm so sorry you have to go through that also. Blew, what a pain in the neck that's become. All right. You're listening to Jill on Money, 855-411-JILL. That's our phone number, our email address, askjill@jillonmoney.com. We'll be right back. You're back with Jill on Money. If you've got a financial question, 855-411-JILL, or send us an email, askjill@jillonmoney.com. Okay, we got an email from Jeff, which is about an annuity. So my uncle recently informed me he was told to invest in a deferred annuity, and he was told to invest by his auto owner's insurance agent. Are you kidding me? Now I got an insurance sales guy, auto insurance guy selling annuities. This is killing me. Okay, so uncle has invested $2,000 a year for the last 2 years. The accumulated value is just under $4,100. My initial reaction is, what would he benefit from a deferred annuity? And Let's see. He's got no debt. He's got 600 grand in retirement, non-retirement accounts. He's single. He's not married. When I read the policy, I was shocked to learn that he receives a monthly income starting on his maturity date of 2049, which is when my uncle will be 95. Anyway, as far as I can tell, the policy is guaranteed to grow 1% a year. It's not clear what it's invested in. And am I wrong to think this was a totally unwise investment given the circumstances? It even seems borderline unethical to me for the insurance agents to have sold this policy. It pretty clearly serves no need for my uncle. I've told him to stop putting $2,000 into the annuity. The decision to pay the surrender fee of about 8% or get the money out or leave it there and grow slowly over time. Is my thinking correct? Do you have any advice? Yes, stop paying on this. You're probably right. This this was certainly borderline not in your uncle's best interest because it's dumb. It's just dumb to think that this was just a sale. That's all it was. And it's another reason why I think it is so vitally important that we start demanding that we have the fiduciary duty operate in every part of financial services. What a shame. Anyway, don't blow out of this thing. Don't pay 8%, but don't put any more money in. Thanks for writing, Jeff. All right. When we come back with Jill on Money, Neil von Zutphen, he's a CFP. He's got some interesting insights into the industry and how he runs his business. 855-411-JILL. Ask Jill at JillOnMoney.com. We'll be right back.